Welcome to World Socialist Radio. Capitalism is mental. Earlier this year, that bloodthirsty vampire of the Labour Party, Tony Blair, creaked out of his coffin to declare, "We've got to get the younger generation back to work," and ominously suggested medicalising the ups and downs of life. You've got to be careful of encouraging people to think that it's some sort of condition or other when they're simply confronting the challenges of life, he says. Anyone who's been through a challenging period knows that, of course, it can impact your health. Yet, that vampire Blair insists that too many young people are choosing not to work and calling for benefits reform. Now, Labour is cutting personal independence payment and has signalled it'll tighten up eligibility rules, with shadow ministers suggesting PIP is not working as it should. Keir Starmer's proposed reforms to disability benefits provoked a rebellion of over 100 Labour MPs who argued that the plan would strip support from up to 800,000 people, deepen poverty for 300,000 to 700,000 more, including 50,000 children, and create a two-tier welfare system that forsakes the most vulnerable. Critics include grassroots movements like DPAC and disabled constituents. They warn that this is not a compassionate reform, but a continuation of austerity, with MPs likening it to the biggest attack on the welfare state since George Osborne. Charities insist that cuts won't boost employment and demand a pause, transparency, and genuine consultation with disabled people. Labour MPs are pledging to vote against and calling for alternative reforms like taxing the super rich instead of penalising those in need. Since then, following the public debt backlash and intervention by the UN, Parliament voted on the 1st of July to remove the clauses tightening up the PIP eligibility. These measures are now deferred pending the review by Sir Stephen Timms, expected in autumn of 2026. Existing PIP claimants are said not to be affected by the current legislation. However, changes to the universal credit remain in place. From April 2026, new claimants of the limited capability for work-related activity element will receive reduced support. Existing recipients will continue receiving full payments, adjusted for inflation, though, for 2029. The Rosenhan experiment in 1973, exposed flaws in psychiatric diagnosis. Psychologist David Rosenhan and several others feigned auditory hallucinations to gain admission to a psychiatric hospital. Once admitted, they acted normally, but doctors still diagnosed them with serious mental illnesses and kept them institutionalized for weeks. The study highlighted the subjectivity and unreliability of psychiatric labels, showing that once somebody was labeled as mentally ill, normal behaviour was interpreted as pathological. In a follow-up challenge, the hospital claimed it could spot fake patients and identified several, only for Rosenhan to reveal that he'd sent none. This is not just a few misguided doctors. The Western medical model has long been a tool of oppression. Colonisers have always arrived with missionaries, medics, mercenaries, and merchants. Psychiatry was part of that arsenal, pathologizing indigenous cultures, crushing resistance, and justifying forced assimilation. Traditional beliefs and ways of life were conveniently labeled as madness. Psychiatry helped run residential schools, enforced sterilization, and packed institutions, all aimed at breaking indigenous communities. Psychiatric diagnosis was used to pathologize cultural differences, frame indigenous resistance as insanity, and justify colonial policies of confinement and re-education. The same logic still operates today. Psychiatric labels are often used to control people rather than help them. Women have often been the prime target for psychiatry's controlling hand. Those who refused to fit into the patriarchal roles were labeled as hysterical or locked away in asylums. Psychiatry became a handy tool to silence women who challenged capitalism, patriarchy, or both. Colonization made this worse for indigenous women who were branded insane for practicing traditional healing or resisting colonial authority. Today, women, especially those who are neurodivergent or marginalized, are still dismissed, misdiagnosed, and over-medicated. Psychiatry continues to treat women's distress as personal pathology rather than a response to social and economic oppression. A true alternative would focus on community care, autonomy, and dismantling the structures that create suffering in the first place. But when the profit motive comes into play, it stops being about helping and about making people useful. Under capitalism's relentless pressure, people, especially those who are marginalized, develop ways of thinking and acting that do not fit into narrow boxes labeled as normal. Neurodivergence is not purely created by capitalism. It's always existed and would exist under other systems, but the way it manifests today is shaped by the demands and pressures of this system. Traits like hyperfocus, pattern recognition, and creative thinking can help people resist the nonsense of capitalism, yet capitalism only values these traits when they increase productivity. Difficulties with executive function or sensory processing become disabling because of rigid, noisy, punishing environments. If we lived in a society structured differently, one that prioritized people over profit, neurodivergence might look very different, both in how common it is and how it is understood. Marx, in his theory of alienation, says the working class stops thinking about their personal needs to the benefit of their labor, as if they were disconnected from their priorities. Capitalism is not just a class war, it is a war of the mind. It demands conformity, it punishes non-conformation, and it uses bullying and trauma as a tool of control. In the UK alone, 71% of autistic adults are unemployed, and when they are, they often accept wages that are far below that which their skills deserve. Autistic people experience alienation that is similar to the process described by Marx. In a neurotypical majority, and an ableist society, is generally accepted that people who are neurodivergent need to be productive members of their community to have worth. Newly uncovered Nazi-era documents reveals that Hans Asperger's, the Austrian pediatrician for whom after Asperger's syndrome is named, was more complicit with the Nazi regime than previously believed. Though he later claimed to have protected disabled children, records showed that he referred some patients to the Am Springelgrad Clinic in Vienna, where nearly 800 children were killed as part of the Nazi euthanasia program. Historian Herwig Czech's research, published in Molecular Autism, suggests Asperger's aligned himself with the regime to advance his career. Despite not being a member of the Nazi Party, Asperger's as a diagnosis was essential as a delineation between useful autistic workers and those who the Nazis saw as useless eaters. The struggle in the workplace continues. Neurodivergent people often develop ways of thinking that refuse to follow King Capital's dictated logic, question authority, and imagine new ways of being. The pushback against capitalism is, in many ways, also a neurodivergent pushback, one that questions authority, reimagines community, and refuses the alienation that capitalism enforces. Capitalism will always find ways to divide us, control us, and blame us for the suffering it creates. The only real cure is to tear the system down that is making us sick in the first place. The revolution against capitalism must also be a war for neurodivergent liberation. We need to recognize the links between capitalism, trauma, alienation, and neurodivergence if we want a world where all minds are recognized with inherent value, not just those that keep the profit machine greased.
You have been listening to World Socialist Radio, produced by the Socialist Party of Great Britain. If you would like to find out more, you can visit our website, spgb.net.